Dark Wreath Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. Autumn semester 2009, this is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 7. Lecture 16, delivered on October 13, 2009. The title of this lecture is Using Time Value of Money in Cash Flow Analysis.
Today, Using Time Value of Money in Cash Flow Analysis. I will take the homework problems that I gave you as the platform for discussing using the formulas themselves and also for extensions of the formulas and discuss other uses along the way of these present value and future value of annuity ideas. Now, first of all, for the first problem, which was for a future value of an annuity, it was at 6.25%, so we just crank out, it was for an FV, and that will be the level cash flow times 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the number of periods minus 1 divided by the periodic interest rate. It's really just plug and chug is all these problems are. That's all they ever come out to be. So in this case, we got the future value, and it is a regular annuity because the first payment in this future value occurs right now. Okay, so that's a regular future value annuity. Would be the level cash flow. What is he putting in the bank every month? $1,000 every year? Eh, that's not bad. $1,000 times 1 plus 0.068, and this is to the 20th power, minus 1, all divided by 0.068. It was 6.8%, wasn't it? No, I'm sorry, 6.25. I'm sorry. That's 6.25%. It was 6.25%. 6.25%. 0.0625. Now, just make sure you can do these in on your calculator and get the answers that the right answers. And it's a matter of if you want to break it down, be careful about rounding things. It's better if you can just hammer the whole thing in one chew. 0.0625 plus 1. And then you raise that to the 20th power. And then you subtract one. That was different. Okay. 1.0625, you raise that to the 20th power. And then you subtract 1. And then you divide the result by 0.0625. And you get a future value annuity factor of about 38.0944. We call those the factor, and I'll explain about that in just a little bit here. But for now, just know that this interim number, 1 plus 0.0625 to the 20th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625 times one, that in itself is called the future value annuity factor. Did you get that number, by the way? Is that the number? Let me try that again just to make sure. I had it written there wrong on the board. 20th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625. Oh, it is. I did write it a little wrong there. It is, that factor is 37.7897. Be careful about rounding it, though. So the future value is 1,000 times 37.7897. And then you should get a future value of this annuity of $37,789.65. Now, here's what I want to get to. This is a regular annuity in a future value sense. And that means that in this annuity, at period zero, right now, you push in your first 1,000 bucks, and then each year after that, you're going to push in $1,000. Here's 1, 2, on through until you get ninth year 19, $1,000. And then year 20, you collect it right here at the end of that period of 20. I'm sorry, 20. And then you collect it here at the end. So that last 20th year one, you let it grow through the year. Now, if this were an annuity due, a future value annuity due, your first kick into this would not occur at the beginning of the period. It would occur at the end of the period. So you would have one last, you would not have a $1,000 right there at the beginning, but you'd have $1,000 you'd put in, and then you take the whole wad out. Now, is that future value going to be higher or lower than the 37,789.65? Would the annuity due, the future value annuity due, be of greater value or lesser value? It would work it. Okay. See that $1,000 right there? It won't earn the money through the 20 years. It happens right, oh God, it happens right there. So you're not, you, so we might expect it to be a little less, but here's the thing. We can do a formula. There is a formula for annuities due, annuity due formulas, there are. But what we really could do here is just simply take a 19-year annuity out there and then add $1,000 to it at the end. That would save you having to memorize another formula. So if I did this as an annuity due, I would do it as a 19-year annuity the same way, 1,000 times 1 plus 0.0625 to the 19th power minus 1 divided by 0.0625, and then I just add $1,000 to it that I'm going to put in right before I take all of it out. And if I were to do that, I would go 1.0625 to the, whoops, to the 20th power, to the 19th power, minus 1, and then divide that by 0.0625, and I'd get a value factor of 34.6256. And for God's sake, someone check my work here. I do so suck at arithmetic. So it'd be 1,000 times 34.6256 plus $1,000 extra. And so I should get $34,625.56 plus $1,000. And I'll get $35,625.56. Sure enough, a little less. Not, it should not be dramatically different. A little bit. So now, that's a future value for your consideration. Now, present value, and in the problem that I gave you, on January 1, 2010, you win a lottery with a payoff of $2,500 at the end of every year for the next 10 years. If you discount the cash flow at 7.8%, what is the least amount you would accept as a single payment right now instead? So we're going to get, so we have a timeline, and sometimes it's nice to just write these, draw these timelines out here. So at the end of every year, you're going to get $2,500 for, what is it, 0, 1, 2, on out to 7, 8, 9, 10. And then you're going to get a lot, $2,500 through these 10 years. It's classic annuity, present value. You just crank it through. Now, the present value formula is the cash level cash flow times 1 minus 1 plus the periodic interest rate to the negative nth power, all divided by R. Just pound it out. You're going to have $2,500. The present value is going to be $2,500 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.078, in this case, to the negative 10th power, all divided by 0.078. And if we beat that one into the calculator's brain, we should come up with 0.078 to the 10th power minus the annuity present value of regular annuity factor here will come out to be 6.7710, and you've got $2,500 times that, and you get a present value of the annuity of $16,927.59. I think that's right, yeah. Again, just make sure you can do them. Now, what if, on the other hand, your first payment came right away? That would be nice. In this case, if I had a present value of an annuity due, would it be worth more or less than this regular annuity that I just did here? Do we have a consensus of the herd here? I don't think we're ready to be an investment club yet. Too much fighting. It would be more, and it's just because instead of waiting to year 10 to get that $2,500 there, you get it now. Now is better than later. So in this case, we should, when we calculate the annuity due, whether we do it by a formula or just modify the existing formula, we should get a number that's somewhat larger than this one. Now, again, there's a formula for annuity due, but you could also just kind of wing it. Take that $2,500 off the 10 and put it here at the beginning. So that $2,500 is going to come to you right now. So the present value of the annuity due is going to be the $2,500 you get now. There's no discount on it because it's happening right now, plus a 9-year annuity of $2,500 discounted at 7.8%. So it would be, that second part would be 2,500 times 1 minus 1 plus 0.078 to the negative 9th over 0.078. So you would get, in this case, for the annuity due, $2,500 plus $2,500 times, and I am going to try to beat this one through the calculator here real quick, 1 minus 1.078 to the negative 9th power minus 0.078. And I get a factor there of 6.2992. So if I take that times 2,500, I'll get $15,000, so my present value will be the $2,500 kicker right on the front end, plus $15,747.94. Add that those two together. Survey says you get $18,247.94. Well, there you go. The annuity due, when it's a present value, the annuity due is worth more than the regular annuity, simply because your cash flow is shifted in time forward somewhat. If for those of you from who remember your dark days of accounting, do you remember the different accounting, the depreciation methods that you were introduced to. There was straight line, and then there was the declining balance. Do they even teach some of yours digits anymore? Vaguely, yes. Yeah. If you hum a few bars, I'll pick up on the chorus. And the MACRS and all that. Well, the whole point of those was to load the depreciation expense, which is an expense against your net, a taxable income, forward in time. That's the whole idea. Essentially, we're talking annuities here. We're just trying to find ways to bring value forward in time. In this case, in the case of the depreciation, by finding an accelerated method that puts most of the expense in the early years, all you're doing is increasing the value of the tax shield arising from the depreciation by shifting the shield forward in time. That's what you're seeing here. Now, the bottom line of all of this. Oh, I should do this. I've got a chalkboard here. Why don't I do that? Yeah, I haven't used a chalkboard in a long time. Oh, that sucks. I can't even bring it. Okay. If it's present value, annuity, a regular annuity versus an annuity due, imagine what I used to look like. I wear black and I used to write on chalkboards back in the early days. I mean, come out looking white every... The regular annuity will be less than the annuity due. All other parameters being equal. If it's a future value, the annuity that is regular compared to the annuity that is due the regular annuity will be worth more than the annuity due. Those are things to keep in mind. They are just delicious multiple choice questions. Hint, hint. Okay? Which of the following is correct? The present value of a regular annuity is greater than the present value of a regular annuity due, but the future value of an annuity that is regular is greater than the... See, I could just go through four or five different possible ways just to confuse the hell out of you. Okay, enough of that one. Enough. And though there's some dues versus regulars... What I wanted to do, however, I do want to get to that one where you had a non-level annuity. This is an introduction to a dark and grim world indeed. And I think I said a little bit about this previously, but you can set up all kinds of weird-ass cash flow patterns. And I could write you a problem for an exam that would just absolutely knock you dead. And then, well, if you had just noticed there, it was really a simple problem. All you had to do was do this and that, and then swing a dead cat over it a couple of... You can get all kinds of weirdness. I'm showing you something here that's sort of a window on how you can take complex cash flows and sometimes break them down into cash flows that are approachable by formulas. Look, in this case of problem number 5, you had a non-level annuity. And here I'm sneaking in the idea of net present values on you as well. Okay, here at the beginning, you had a $3 million outlay of money. And then you've got a time stream going forward. Now, in this case, it goes a total of 8 years. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and 8. Now, I mentioned here there is no salvage value. That's not a big thing. If there's a salvage value, it's just a big lump here at the end. Just take a lump sum present value of it. Salvage values are actually pretty easy to deal with, and in a way you're going to see a salvage value on Thursday when we do bond pricing. But in this deal right here that I've got up on the board, you've got this cash flow pattern. In years 1, 2, and 3, you've got $500,000 coming in. And then in year 4, you have $600,000. And in year 5, you have $800,000. And then in years 6, 7, and 8, it settles back down to $500,000. The spike has passed on it. And then the project ends, and you have no salvage value on it. Well, it's obviously not a regular annuity, but there is a regular annuity embedded. If you will look at year 4, where there's $600,000, that is actually a $500,000 annuity payment plus a $100,000 annuity payment. And then in year 5, that $800,000 is a $500,000 payment plus a $300,000 payment. Now, the reason I am doing this is that by pulling those $500,000 out of years 4 and 5, I have constructed a very level, very regular, plain old garden variety annuity. But I also have $100,000 in year 4 and $300,000 in year 5. Well, I can just discount those back as just play a lump sum present values. It's not simple, but it sure is a heck of a lot easier than doing lump sum present value of each of those cash flows for 8 years. So in this case, what I've actually got going on is that the present value forward of this stuff right here, I've got $500,000 times 1 minus 1 plus, what the heck was my 0.088, 8.8%, 0.088 to the negative 8th, all divided by 0.088. There is the level annuity. But I'm also going to have to bring home the $100,000 from year 4. So that's 100,000 times 1 plus 0.088 to the negative 4th. And I'm going to have to also bring home that $300,000 from year 5. So that's $300,000 times 1 plus 0.088 to the negative 5th. That's all the present values. There they are. There's your dinner. And then I can just run the calculation and hope to God it comes out right here. What do we got here? A $500,000, the regular, that plain flat level annuity there, garden variety annuity, is 1 minus 1.088. to the negative 8th power divided by 0.088. So the annuity factor there is 5.5762. And then flogging it forward, I've got 500,000. I'll just write 500,000 times 5.5762. And that comes out to be $2,788,100.43. I think that's right. I hope that's right. And then I'm going to have to add these two lumps onto it, One of them was 100,000 times 1.088 to the negative fourth. And so that $100,000 residual there on year four comes out to be worth, as a present value, $71,364.86. And then that second lump, that residual of $300,000 there at year five, works out to be, cranking it, what worth $196,778.11. Now, if I add everything up there, I hope to come up with a number 88,100.43. Yeah. The positive part of the cash flow comes up to be $3,056,243. Wait, let me write that again. A little more cleanly. Comes out, well, let me write it here so that you can all see it, because this board is a little truncated. Okay, that'll come out to be $3,056,243.40. Now we add in the negative $300,000 that we got right away. And if you do that, you add the negative $3 million to it. I think I said 300,000. 3 million to it. You will find out that the net present value of this project is positive $56,243.40. That means the project is a go, simply because it's a positive net present value. This is a positive NPV project. So you would accept this project, and that's the terminology we use. We accept this project. Now, let me ask you something here. And in any one of these problems, there might be a way. Always think about what I'm after. If I gave you one where the cash flow was not level, ask yourself, is there an embedded level cash flow in there with just some residuals along the way? That's important, because that will simplify your calculations enormously if there is. Now, let me get to this question I was going to pose to you. Here we go. The discount rate we used for this project was 8.8%. What would have been the result? What would have been the effect on the final answer if instead of 8.8%, I had said use 9.5%? The net present value would have been less. Yes, it would have been less. If I had used 10%, it would have been even less. You see, as the discount rate goes up, it is more and more likely that I will reject the project, because the present value of the positive future cash flows is going down. You're discounting them at a steeper rate, we say. We're discounting them at a steeper rate. That makes the value of them less now. But on the other hand, if I had said, 8.8%, that's too high, try 7.5%. Well, that would have made the present value of those positive future expected cash flows higher. So they would have been more, it would have been easier for them to overcome the upfront cost of the project. If I had said 6%, they would have been even higher. It would become more and more likely to accept. Now, if I were to draw this as a graph on the vertical axis, the net present value of a project, against the discount rate that I would use for analyzing the cash flows of the project, I would see that the profile would always be a downward sloping curve. It wouldn't be necessarily a line. It would be more like a curve. I'm drawing it like a straight line. That would eventually cross NPV of zero, the horizontal axis, and then go into negative territory. What we know at this point about the particular cash flows, this project that we're talking about here, is that when I'm up here at 8.8%, when I'm at 8.8%, oops, I'm in positive NPV territory. See, that 8.8% would be associated with an NPV of positive $56,000. But I know that as I pushed my discount rate higher and higher, the NPV would go down. Until I pushed my NPV, my discount rate high enough, maybe 10%, I'm not sure where this went. I should have done that calculation. I would have gotten a negative NPV, net present value for the project. Here's the payoff. See that place where it hits the y-axis or the x-axis, the interest rate axis? You see that where we have an NPV of zero? We have a name for that interest rate. We call that the internal rate of return of the project, the IRR. Trust me when I tell you that it is a pain in the ass to do that, find an IRR by hand. That's why these calculators that we have now, they can do it. They can actually back in and work back and forth to find the interest rate that would make the net present value of the future expected cash flows exactly hit the cash that you put up front. Believe me, back in the old days, we actually had to work back and forth. Well, let's try, it must be, we'd start with like something like 8.8%, and that would be positive, so we'd go to 12%, that would be negative. Okay, let's work our way back and forth and back and forth. Imagine what a pain in the dirty rear that was back in those days. Now we've got a calculator, it'll just do all the work for you. You'll see your calculator will get blank for a few seconds. When it's doing one of these, you tell it all the cash flows, and then say, find the IRR, and you push the button, and it just goes pig face blank looking at you. And, you know, you are you okay? Will you give me a minute? I'm working on it. I mean, it's doing thousands of calculations, iterations back and forth. And sometimes, actually, in real world, I did one that was actually a real cash flow analysis, and I punched it in on an HP, and the thing just kept going running. And it was like, I don't remember. It just seemed like it was an awfully long time before it finally came back and gave me the answer. Here's a warning, though. This IRR technique is powerful, quite powerful. But it's also, you cannot have more than one switch in the sign of the cash flow. See, in this one over here, it switched from negative to positive. You can't have more than one switch in the sign of the cash flow. If you have more than one switch in the sign of the cash flow, there is no such thing as an internal rate of return. And it's simply because it's a mathematical thing. The function, the NPV function, does not have what we call a monotonic surface. It actually goes up and down like a porpoise. And it will actually strike as many times as there are switches in the cash flow sign. So if it goes negative up front, then you get a couple of years of positive, then you go negative again, then it goes positive. The NPV function would actually porpoise, cut the axis once, and then cut it again. So you can't, IRR has no meaning there. So what do you use instead? That's when you call mom and see what she thinks you should do with the project. Don't ask me. I don't know what to do with a project like that. There are other methods we can use. But anyway, Okay. By the way, notice something interesting about this. Remember in the early days of the course, back in those happy times when we were young and we were in love, and the whole world was an adventure for us together, living together, loving together, fighting our way through finance. Oh, anyway, I'll shut up. But you remember when I was showing you, I gave you projects that had different rates of return, and I said as interest rates go up, you'll cut off more projects. This is why. This is the whole point of it. It's because if your prevailing interest rate environment is going up, fewer and fewer projects will meet your thresholds. So, in other words, every project's net present value is going down as interest rates go up. So, projects are going to fall by the wayside, dropping into negative NPV territory as the prevailing interest rate environment lifts. And that's what I was talking about back then when I was saying, well, suppose you had different returns on investment of 15%, 10%, and 5%, or whatever those numbers were I was writing on the board. What happens if interest rates are 3%? Well, you'll take all of the projects. If the interest rates go up to 7%, well, you'll cut off that first project because it's not returning as much as you need. See, that's the whole reason. It's because as the interest rates are going up, your discount rates are going up, and that's dropping the net present values of projects, and it's pushing more projects into negative NPV territory. Sort of coming full circle on you with some things. Now, the last thing that I want to do is mention for this part is to mention the idea, mention the problem with mortgage rates. This is a classic, actually very old calculation going back several centuries at least. The one where you want to borrow $200,000. You've had your eye on that double wide trailer, and it's $200,000. It's a ridiculous price, but it does have the entire interior in Elvis decor, velvet, a lady magnet, if you will. You know? And so you go to your friendly banker and you say, I should like to issue a bond. And the banker will say, what? Well, that's what my professor said was happening here. Yeah, you're going to issue a bond, and the banker is going to buy your bond for $200,000. And let's work it out here. Now, it's like skiing behind a robot. Where the hell is it? Oh, we have a 30-year bond. It's going to be a 5.89%er, and the periodic payments are monthly. So what we're going to do here is we are going to say it'll be a present value formula because we are getting $200,000 at present, right now. So we could say that the present value of this project is $200,000. Now, we don't know the level cash flow. That's the mortgage payment that we don't know. But we do know that the periodic interest rate is going to be 0.0589 divided by 12. Don't estimate that, for God's sake. Just key it in on your calculator. Kill a few electrons. The number of periods will be 30 years times 12 months per year. You do want to do that calculation. That'll be 360. And these get to be these are actually so useful because you can actually, once you have this formula and this power in your hand, you can crank out and work out what payments would be on different loans that you would have to take out. Is it going to be affordable, the mortgage, the payments on a car loan or a house loan or something like that? What interest rate would you have to aim for? How much could you borrow? How long would you want to borrow it for? You can do all of that. Now, we're going to use the plain old vanilla present value of a level annuity to work this out, which is present value is the level cash flow payments times 1 minus 1 plus r to the negative nth over are. Now, in this case, we'll have to make sure that we put in the right numbers for R and N. And so we know now that $200,000 is going to be that level payment, whatever it is, times 1 minus 1 plus 0.0589 divided by 12 to the negative 360th power, all divided by 0.0589 divided by 12. Watch it when you put this in. For God's sake, use parentheses. And don't just keep hitting parentheses hoping you get the right number of parentheses. That's my trick at Excel. But if you work this out, I'm going to do that mess. That is 1 minus 1 plus 0.0589 divided by 12 to the negative 360th power divided by all of that mess divided by the quantity 0.0589 divided by 12. And the number that comes out, we've come to the next step of the formula, which is $200,000 equals the level payment times 168.7773. Now let me stop here just for a moment. We can finish this up. We can finish this up in just a minute. There was this time. Many people these days say that this is just a story, a myth. But I was there when we didn't have calculators. It was a dark time when we calculated things by hand. But sometimes we couldn't calculate them by hand because it just was too much like work. So we relegated that to flunkies from the accounting programs or to someone who did that kind of stuff for a living. In those days, and you still see these finance books, textbooks like this, I believe at the back of your textbook they even have the tables, were tables down along a side row. For example, mortgage tables. Along a side row would be the number of years of the loan, assuming you were making monthly payments. And along the top would be interest rates in increments of like 0.01%, maybe 0.05%, maybe 0.5%. And then in the interior of the table, you would sort of triangulate. You'd find, okay, there's the number of years, and here's our interest rate, and you locate that, 168.7773 in this case. If I had those tables in front of me, I would go down, find 30 years, monthly payments. These would be mortgage monthly payments. And then I would go over and find 5.89% along the top. And I would go into the center and I would find that number 168.7773. We call that back in my time, we called this particular one, that we'd call that a mortgage factor. They're essentially present value factors. And you still can use them to this day. They're still around. And I believe, like I said, in the tables at the back of the textbook, they have tables. And you can even go to flea markets and find the old finance textbooks. I still have a finance textbook that is nothing but present and future value tables for all kinds of different numbers of periods and interest rates. It's an amazing thing. Now we just have our calculators do these. But anyway, to finish this problem up, the payment would be $200,000 over 168.7773. And if I work that out, and what I usually do is I say, okay, I've got that number 168.7773 in my calculator. I just divide it by 200,000 and then hit the reciprocal button. See what I mean? If you've already got the number 168.7773 in your calculator, there's no point in clearing it and putting it again. Just divide the number by 200,000, and once you get the result, just flip it over and you'll get the number that you're looking for. In this case, $1,184.99. Your mortgage payment will be $84.99. Can you afford that? Sure. For that kind of a trailer? Yeah. On the outskirts of Decatur? Oh, yeah. Life is good. But there's an underlying point here. You know, a lot of people just go to the bank and let them tell you what your loan interest rate is, and then you can do this yourself and then figure out for yourself before you walk in, before you decide what kind of a car you want, what kind of a home you want. You can work out the calculation yourself and ask yourself about affordability and sort of get a reality check on yourself before you ever go to a bank, before you even talk to a realtor. You can say, okay, let's say that my income is $60,000 a year. So my income would be, let's say, take home is about $3,000 a month. I should not ever have a mortgage payment that would be above, let's say, about 25% of my money, my take home income. So in that case, I've got, let's say, $3,000 a month comes in, times what's a fourth of that? $750. Can we afford this? No. That's your reality check right there. And it's easy, it's possible for us to do this and take some power into our own hands to manage our own budget and do some reality checking. Yeah, that trailer was nice, but you're going to have to go with the one without that aluminum skirt around the outside, really. And the waterbed, who needs it? Not with a loved man like you. Okay, you see, but this is actually a very useful calculation. This is one of the greatest things about finance, is that every now and then we stumble into these things that are actually usable by normal, real people. Now, also interesting, if you are bat crap crazy, you might decide, if I'm teaching a real estate finance course here, which you might run in to see me do every once in a while, a lot of it's just doing stuff like this. We add in all kinds of things like the points on the loan and stuff like that, and prepayment penalties, and consider all kinds of different little odds and ends, but it's really just this, that's right at the center of everything we do in real estate finance. It's that right there. Enough of that. Let me show you something new and different here. I'm going to take you on a little bit of a fantasy journey just for a moment here. Now, you've been living your life assuming that you were a nobody like everyone else. It's like me, like everyone else in here. There wasn't anything special about you until the day a lawyer called you and shocked you by explaining that, in fact, you were Michael Jackson's illegitimate love child. God, I couldn't keep that one straight. Indeed, he remembered you in his will. For the rest of forever, you're going to get a payment at the end of every year. $1,000. It's his way of saying, hey, beat it. Just beat it. So we want to know, what is this worth to you now? What is it possibly worth to you? This is a permanent amount that's going to come to you forever and ever and ever. We call those perpetuities. Perpetuities. So we are looking to find out the present value of a perpetuity. You say, well, $1,000 every year forever? Well, wouldn't that have like an infinite value? No, it wouldn't, because 100 years from now, $1,000 you're going to get in 100 years has almost no value whatsoever now as a present value. I don't care what discount rate you're using. Well, yeah, I'm sure if the discount rate were zero, it'd be incredibly valuable. But these things have value. And the point of a perpetuity is that some very real world things are priced as perpetuities. For example, think about the theory of a corporation. It lives forever, unless the CEO and the upper management screw the pooch, which they usually do. But in theory, a corporation lives forever. So if it were paying you a dividend, suppose that it just said 50-cent dividend forever. That would be a very real thing, and that would be the way you could value the stock. You say, well, wait a minute, why wouldn't there'd be a present value of a dividend, but when I sold the stock, wouldn't there be the present value of my sale? Well, presumably, what you sold it for should be out there the present value of the dividend that will continue from there on out. So in a very real sense, we can get at least a first handle on pricing a stock through this perpetuity concept. And this is for a level perpetuity. And also, another cool thing, a preferred stock is an exact perpetuity. Because preferred stock, the way preferred stock works, there's a par value of the preferred stock. Now, it's a lot bigger than the par value of a common stock. You'll see the par value of a preferred share of stock, $100. And then there will be a statement of dividend, 7%, something like that. That means that forever you will get 7% of par value. That means that forever you will get $7 a year for each share of preferred stock. That's why preferred stock is really kind of a nice blend of a bond and a common stock, is because the preferred stock dividend would have to be paid before common stock dividends are ever paid. And so it's kind of safer, and you know exactly what you're going to get forever and ever. And it is forever and ever, unless that corporation screws the pooch and bites the dust and takes a dirt nap. So there are very real instruments that have the profile of their cash flow, has the profile of a perpetuity. And like I said, it's our first way of getting a handle on valuing stock. And here we'll look at common stock. Now, the first one I'll do, first of all, let me give you the formula. The present value of a perpetuity for a dividend-paying stock. If the dividend will never change, it is nothing but that dividend divided by the discount rate that you use. That's all it is. It's almost like a, duh, that's not complicated. No, it's not. So if I had ABC Corp pays a 50-cent dividend every year, 50-cent per year dividend every year on each share of stock, what is the price right now of that stock? Of ABC Corp. Common. Well, it's almost hurts to do it. the price would be 50 cents a share divided. Oh, what happened? We need a discount rate. Okay, let's say the discount rate for cash flows from this company is, let's say, 10%. Now, how would I come up with that 10%? The capital asset pricing model would be one place I could start. If I knew the beta of the stock or the beta of a comp, a comparable. So we'll do the price is 50 cents divided by 0.10, which comes up to be $5. The stock price would be $5, the present value of a level perpetuity. Forever and ever, it has a price right now of $5. Nothing complicated about that at all. Now, let's take a twist on the formula. What if the stock's dividend wasn't flat, but instead the dividend grew at a constant rate year over year? This would be a constant growth rate perpetuity. Now, for a constant growth rate perpetuity, the formula works like this. The present value is the dividend at year one divided by the discount rate minus the growth rate. Now watch it. D1 is next year's dividend. D1 is next year's dividend. So in this case, suppose that I told you this, but I said that the dividend will grow at a constant rate of 4% per year. Make sure you use D1, not D0. I told you the D0 dividend, the dividend now. To get the D1, I have to grow the dividend now by one period. So in other words, D1 in this case would be 50 cents times 1 plus 0.04. So that would be next year's dividend would be 50. Oh, I can do that. Get off me. 52. Thank you. Would be 52 cents. Be careful about that. Usually in these problems, we try to throw the zinger at you. We give you this period's dividend. So now we can do the formula. PV will be 52 cents over 0.10 minus 0.04. So it'll be 52 cents over 0.06. And in that case, 0.052 enter 0.06 divide my ass. Try that again, 0.52 enter 0.06. $6.67, is that right? 867. I can't even see. I don't have my glasses on. Not that I need those reading glasses. Not like I'm older or something. $8.67. Notice what a growth rate of the dividend does. Do you see that? It brought it up by more than half the price of the stock. So growth on a dividend, and that's something that companies, they bust their butt to hold the dividend at least level. If they can, they try to do a small incremental growth period year by year on it. So there would be the growth rate formula applied to the perpetuity formula applied to a constant growth rate. Now here's the last part of it. And here's where it gets, I can bring us full circle back to what I was talking about with complicated cash flows. Notice in this formula that the growth rate can't be more than the discount rate, otherwise the formula collapses on you. See, if I had a discount rate of, let's say, 8% and a growth rate of 12% in the dividend, the bottom would come out to be a negative number, and that it just doesn't work because you get a negative price for the stock. It just falls apart, the formula does. So what do you do in a case where you have a company in its early period of dividends, it's rapidly growing the dividend, but you know that it's not going to keep doing that forever. No company is stupid enough to keep up a high growth rate on a dividend. It'll stabilize the dividend down the road. How do you handle something like that? So let us work out, let's see what we could do there. But we have to remember, you might not have to. I shouldn't say that. I have to draw a timeline to keep my head straight on these. Look, suppose we had ABC Corp now is now paying a dividend of 20 cents a share. And that dividend will grow ...20% for the next 2 years, and then thereafter stabilize to grow at 5%. Suppose the discount rate to use is 12%. What's the price of the stock using dividend pricing? Yeah?
Quick question. The 20%, how many years was that?
We'll grow for 20% for 2 years. I'm sorry, I didn't write it. For 2 years. I said it, but I didn't write it. For 2 years. Now, here is where a timeline will save your bacon. Now, some people can do the, I've had students who can just do these in their head. I've known professors who can do them in their heads. There's something wrong with people like that, if you ask me. Okay, look what I'm going to do. Watch how I'm going to do this. And no, I don't expect you to see, you would have seen this on your own instantly. It takes time to get your thinking oriented in this way, to think about cash flow patterns and how you manipulate them. But look, this company has paid a dividend, what was it, 20 cents right here at year zero. And then it's going to grow that 20 cent dividend by 20%. So at this point, it will have, at year one, it will have a 20 cent dividend times 1 plus 0.20, which will be a 24 cent dividend. Are you okay on that? At year one, it will have a 24 cent dividend because its dividend is growing at 20% right now in year one. Now, in year two, it grows another 20%. So in year two, the dividend will be 24 cents times 1 plus 0.20. And now I've got, I can't believe I have to use my calculator to do this. And that should be 28.8 cents. Grr. Okay, are you okay there? Now, it stabilizes to, what did I say, a 5% growth rate? So at year three, it is now a dividend of 28.8 cents times 1 plus 0.05, which will come out to be 30.24 cents. Oops, 30.24 cents. I can't even remember it long enough to get over there to 30.24 cents. 30.24 cents. Okay. Believe it or not, we've got everything we need to clean up the problem. And you're saying, huh? Why? Okay. Look. I want the present value right here, right now, of this all this mess. Okay. First things first. I can take the present value of this turbulent cash flow. See it? 20 cents, 24 cents, 28.8 cents. The present value of that piece right there is going to be 20 cents plus 24 cents times 1 plus, what was my discount rate, 0.12 to the negative first, plus 28.8 cents times 1 plus 0.12 to the negative second. Where are we? Are we okay on that? All I'm doing is taking those messy ones. You say, well, why aren't you doing the rest? Patience. This was the part where I had the nasty growth rate that couldn't work in a formula, in that perpetuity formula. So I'll just pound that out. What the hell does that come out to be? 20, and I'm going to be estimating here, I know that. 24 cents times 1.12 to the negative 20, negative first. $21.43 cents. So I've got 20 cents for the first right away. I'm getting right away. And then that first amount, 24 cents, discounted back 1 year at 12%, will come out to be 21.43 cents. And that second piece there, 28.8 cents times 1.12 to the negative second. That is, that 28 cents 2 years out is worth 22.96 cents right now. So if I add up those three pieces, I come up with 44.39 cents. Did I screw up?
Plus the
0.2. I was just testing your ass to see if you were watching what I was doing there. 64. Yeah, that's good. You caught that. I wanted to make sure you would. Okay, now, we're almost home.
We are?
Yeah. Do you see that? That 30.24 cents there at year three, that's D1 relative to year two. You say, let's try that again. That 30.24 cent dividend in year three is D1 relative to year two. Why would I care about that? Because I've got a stable growth rate now. So at this point right here, I can find out the present value of the remaining, at year two, of the remaining cash flow perpetuity this way. The present value at year two of the rest of that mess is 30.3024 divided by 0.12 minus 0.05. 0.3024 divided by 0.07, which is 12% minus 5%, is $4.32. That's what That perpetuity is worth at year two. A perpetuity that starts in year three with 30.24 cents and grows at 5% forever after that has a present value at year two of $4.32. Now the last piece of it would be, okay, if that's at year two, I have to discount that back now and put it with this piece here. So I would have to do $4.32 times 1 plus 0.12 to the negative second power. And that comes out to be $3.44.39. And now I can add them all up, and it comes out that the value of the stock under these conditions would be $344.39 plus 64.39 plus 0.6439, I'm sorry. So that would be a total value of almost $4.09. That's the present value of the stock. That's the value of the stock. Would I have to do one of those to you on an exam? Hell no, I don't want my tires slashed on my car. But I would give you one of these as a take-home, like a take-home quiz. So you'd have plenty of time to not do anything else for the weekend. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.